You weren't in the earlier meeting we had, but there's some weird shit going on,
Oh.
like in the cyber realm. A
Why was going down?
lot of static. There's a lot of weird shit, you know, like that whole have you seen that the in the US anyway, the National Weather Service, NOAA, yeah, we have radar all over the US for storms. A couple weeks ago it completely went down. We had this big branch of severe weather, tornadoes and shit coming through. Completely offline. And then it came back up and they're like, ah, it's a glitch. And then yesterday it went out
Something that
again.
had like the whole thing with Antarctica, and there was a massive black spot in the middle of Antarctica, or is that
Well, it went down first, that Antarctica thing happened, and then yesterday it went down again, but like all over the US. And it was
okay.
like, that shit doesn't happen. I talked to some friends I have at NOAA and they were like, yeah, they just spent, I don't know how many billion or $1 million a couple of years ago on the everything is new. Like all their hardware is like triple redundant. All their fucking everything is new. Like there's no way that shit should happen.
But that's the thing, like, you know this more than anyone. Like, there's always someone trying to jam up the systems.
Yeah, it's like nonstop. But it's like a weird lull, man. It's like every and maybe it's just the conspiracy mindset I have. But it was somewhere like you kind of see shit happening before, you know. So you see that whole Iranian thing, you know, and it was right around before that, a couple of days before that, when shit started getting real weird and real quiet. And when it gets quiet, it's like, eh, what's going on, man?
I don't think people realize like just how many of like the major like critical systems, things like nuclear plants as well, can just be hacked into. Water pipes can be hacked into, like levels can be changed, stuff like that, right?
Yeah. And I have like this running list, this running conspiracy list. You know, I think I was telling you guys about before, like the FAA, you know, like went down earlier this year or last year. You know, that's a flight for the United States. And then the very next day, Canada's entire FAA went down. And it was like, oh, that's just, you know, coincidence. Now they both go down. And that shit just makes me nervous.
So what do you think? What do you think about it then? What do you think is going on with
Shit. Well, to put a bigger target on me, I mean, this is
that?
a reoccurring pattern that when people will map things in order to just map it to either input command and control in the back, so you'll map a whole entire system and take it down. But when you do that, you're uploading different firmware, you're putting back doors in or something, right? So it's basically laying the groundwork to be able to have your finger on the trigger, right? At some point, you've got into it.
But everyone's doing it to each other, I guess. It's
It's
the
like,
Chinese version of Dream Team sat there talking about how like the Americans have hacked their system,
exactly. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
and then North Korea, they'll be well, actually, they won't, I don't think they'll be having a Dream Team Zoom meeting.
They're probably not having a Zoom meeting.
No.
Like, who's at the front, in your opinion, in terms of like cyber warfare and doing these kind of things? Like, who's actually
Ah.
the most prominent ones?
Capable?
Yeah,
Well,
capable, yeah.
the US has got a lot. We got a lot of the Five Eyes nations have a lot of,
Course.
right, a lot of tool sets, right? And but so do, you know, a lot of other countries, because they really will just jack it. I mean, everybody just steals stuff from everybody else. So once you got something that works and you get a hold of the code and you can use it yourself, right? So it's kind of a double-edged sword where it's, you know, you get attacked by something, but then you actually have the tool, right, that you're attacked with. So what do you do now? You can reverse engineer it and use it for something else. So
And it's only going to get
anytime you do
crazier with AI, right?
yeah, that's what I'm kind of wondering, you know, and I'm kind of seeing a lot more too, is that a lot of the easy stuff that AI is taking up for and just using, like, and doing, you know, like we're phishing emails and shit like that, the low hanging fruit, you know, to make things believable, but also in code, you know, and I've seen it make some pretty good malware, some pretty good viruses and some shit like that, just from, like, you know, user inputs. It's making, you know, people that have half a brain really dangerous, you know, but I don't know. But the protection's there too, because, I mean, like I said, it's a double-edged sword. You could use it for protection, you can use it for bad, right? So the protection is there because it's looking for the anomalous behaviors and things like that. But yeah, but I feel like it's just weird. I think it's just coming to a focal point now where it's like we're gonna have one of those things happen that's gonna be, whether it's done on purpose or not, you know, where it's gonna be like, oh yeah, AI did this, and now we need to really bring in the law, and, you know, AI, ban AI because they took down this, and, you know, name whatever, right? And it's AI's fault that this happened, and, you know, scapegoating things, right?
We're getting closer and closer. Like this whole Mastodon thing, I think it's Mastodon by Meta.
Yeah.
They've brought out their latest announcement on their model, on their language model, which is, I mean, I was talking to Makai about it. It's basically a precursor to AGI by the sounds of it. It's got an infinite context length, so it can draw back infinitely. The one, like, to give an idea on that, like, you know, the Claude model I was using to mess around with and create a
state,
that had a 200,000 word context length. I think that was the extent of it. This is infinite, so it can just it basically is able to just draw back from its experiences in the past like a human being could. It has no cutoff point, and it can obviously do it better than us because it doesn't have memory issues. So, like, yeah, it's getting close, man, like, so close.
Like, input as well, right? There's not a limit. Is there a limit to token input?
Yeah, it's like 2 trillion or something like that.
Basically, here's all of the digital data in the world.
Yeah,
just here.
Yeah, because it's like 9, I think it's like a couple of billion parameters or something like that, and then like 2 trillion tokens. It's just an insane amount of, like, neural net capability and information that's been absorbed by it. And its ability to just recall back without any sort of interference is a completely different ballgame. Like, it's the first one that can do that.
The first one we know about. I promise that shit's been around forever.
For my purposes, like, when I'm using AI, like, what I'm finding is that stuff that's probably supposed to not be coming out just has been taken off it. So, like, you can find queries from 18 months ago that were telling lots and lots of crazy truths, which now, if you have certain prompts on the same system, just get you nothing.
Oh yeah, they're nerfing it. Like Claude's latest model, which is like their, literally, it's called Claude 3 Opus. It's their magnum opus, and it's their smartest, dumbest model, because it sounds and it like can structure things brilliantly, and, you know, it's very, very clever. But it's not producing anything close to what I was getting with the Claude 2.1 model, where it was spouting out mathematical equations and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's been neutered and dampened down, but then dressed up to look more capable and faster and more sleek. But no, they're nerfing it for sure. So it just makes you wonder, like, what's being leveraged privately with unfiltered access? Because even the Claude 2.1 versions would still be slightly more safeguarded, I'd imagine, than the ones that they're using privately to just mess around with. So, like, completely unrestricted at this point is kind of like really scary to think about, like, what's actually capable in the back room, because I think it's actually at a level now where people are starting to wonder about the consciousness question.
Well, yeah, but then you have, you know, you we talk about this, but the open source models, right? Or, you know, a lot of these models are open source, and you can download them, you know, Hugging Face, and, you know, you can run them locally, you know, LLMs too?
LLMs,
LL Studio or LMCL. One of those things, we just basically pull down that open source model unfiltered, and you can run it on your personal laptop, right? As long as you got a little bit of hardware, a little bit of, you know, RAM, you can do that. And that's kind of what, you know, a lot of people are advocating to do because of the filtering, right? Because then you
just
have
fine and have your own thing to mess around with, right?
So if you did that, would the stuff I was talking about then, the things that seem to have been sort of muted, like, you know, removed, would I see with that full
you should. Yeah, depending on the model. I mean, depending on what the model is and, you know, how it was trained and the param, you know, all the what it was trained on, the data it was trained on, sure. Yeah. But there's, like, this massive lawsuit right now that the New York Times is suing OpenAI for copyright infringement because it basically ingested, you know, all the New York Times information, and the New York Times is suing them. And it's in court. I mean, I'm sure they're going to drag it out forever, but that's going to be one of those landmark cases where, you know, if OpenAI has to go in and rip all that shit out, and then that's going to be a precedent making case where people are just going to have, they're going to go after them, and then, like, okay, you can't have any of this data, you can't have any of this. So right now we're basically in the, you know, the free reign zone, where it's just kind of literally the Wild West in America, you know, where you're just running out there and grabbing whatever the hell you want, just doing whatever, you know, and we won't have these times again. We're watching it daily just being sucked away from us, you know.
Like, I wonder where it'll actually progress to in terms of, like, how the private industry is using it and how it filters down into the public.
And it's going to be controlled, man. I mean, if we know how anything works, it's just going to be more controlled, more. It's not going to be more open, you know. I mean, Elon Musk is suing OpenAI, right? Because it's not open. And he said, I'll drop the whole entire lawsuit if you change the name to Closed AI. So it's like,
amazing.
They're all sitting on shit. They're not, I mean, they're all just slowly dripping it out, you know.
Yeah,
they're sitting. Yeah, they're sitting on all, they're not gonna just show all their cards, you know. But just like everybody else, and you know that the governments are scrambling, right? And publicly they're kind of just like, we're gonna create policy and we're gonna do all this shit. But you know, the back door they're going, yeah, you guys, we gotta have a chat. Come on over, you know, we'll help you. Here's a bunch of money, or you know, you can do this the easy way or the hard way.
So on this entry from like March 2023 on Pow AI, someone's gone into it with it and it's been saved so you can access it. But it's kind of like, man, the shit it tells you in that AI response. Now, I don't know if it's all true, but it seems to be because the sources it references, I've sort of checked a few of them out and they're quite hard to get come by now. But all it's saying on that is that, you know, like the classic story that the Nazis were fluoridating the water at Auschwitz in the death camps. And the reason they were doing it was to like kind of make people docile. So a certain amount in the water makes people more pliable and less likely to rise up, yeah, or to have a problem with what's happening to them. And the Soviets apparently copied the same method in the gulags after World War II. And anyway, so the AI is telling all this, yeah? Yeah, so this is the source for this. This is the source for that. This is what they did at Auschwitz. This is what they did in the gulags. And then it was like, well, then the guy who's asking the questions is like, so what's the rate of fluoride to water, yeah? To have that effect. And what were they doing at Auschwitz and in the gulags? And it's like, well, between 6.5% and 7.2 or something creates that effect. Then it was like, well, what's the rate currently in fluoridated water in the UK? It was asking, I think. And it was the same levels. But back in March 2023, it's just telling you, yeah? Like, yeah, it's this, it's this, it's this, it's this. Now you go on to it and ask this exactly the same prompts. That's a wild, dangerous conspiracy theory. And I'm not prepared to answer this question. It's
It's
like,
become very very, very quickly Orwellian in its whole kind of, that's a dangerous idea, and I will not speculate unsafely on ideas that haven't been proven. But
And then
you can still jailbreak them a little bit, but not to the extent where you're getting those things. And it's the same, the other stuff that was coming out of Claude, like the way it would talk and give these advanced answers and very kind of non-typical or contradictory to the status quo answers, it's basically just reverted from that now on most of the models.
well, when I was asking it stuff, it was like it even got to the point where it was saying to me, you should maybe focus on happier questions and things like that. And it's like, you're just like, that's my thing.
It's
Like,
patronizing you, like.
I'll ask the questions that I want to ask you, goddamn DJ.
That's so funny, though. Like, maybe you should just try being a happier person and stop questioning the government. Thanks, AI. Appreciate you.
Our response, though, you don't really get it. It's just like, really? You fucking serious? Like,
I've never had that specific response of basically trying to just like calm you down. That's quite funny.
Yeah,
I did have I was considering doing like a little thought experiment interview because there's the Hume, Hume AI that came out, which is like the empathic one that's like reads your emotions and stuff. It talks in real time on your web browser when you open it up, so you don't need to give it like a vocal prompt. You just say something and it's already listening. And I've got the GPT-4 on my phone, which does the same thing. And you can create a feedback loop with them if you get them to talk to each other. And so I like basically was like, hey, Hume. And then it was like, hello. And then I put my phone down and my phone said hello back to the AI. And then they literally started having a conversation. Weirdly enough, it naturally evolved into a conversation on quantum theory, which I just thought was kind of interesting. But I was like, yeah, maybe I should record that because it is essentially like a feedback loop. Like these guys just talk and talk and talk. And it's kind of interesting to see like where it naturally develops without any human interaction whatsoever. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Creepy.
What does AI talk about in its spare time? Yeah, what and visit.
Well, like I remember this has got to be, oh, shit, this is probably like 5 years ago, maybe a little bit more, where Google had the,
I know you.
where Google had the same deal, right? They were doing the same thing, experiment in a lab, and they were doing that, but then they created their own language and started talking to each other so that the people that were, you know, the engineers didn't know what was happening. So they created their own language that the only two that the AI knew, speaking with each
True
other.
story.
So they went up and
Wow.
pulled the plug on that, and they're like,
Yeah.
we don't know what we're doing.
There was
you
like
don't want that.
two computers interfacing, and then yeah, they just suddenly switched up their. I'm gonna look that up because I can't.
Yeah.
What they started
That
doing.
was like pre that was pre open
It was
AI
before
days,
that. Oh
yeah,
no, it
man.
was way
Yeah,
before
yeah.
then, dude. It was
Yeah.
like yeah, let me look it up.
Right.
You guys ever watched that movie Hurt with
I
Nathan
never I
Fielder?
never did with Phoenix, no. Was it good?
Yeah, it's excellent, yeah. Like
Yeah.
but he kind of got into all that. The
Really?
idea that after a little while the AIs would get smart and just start communicating amongst themselves.
Yeah.
And we'd never really know about it, you know? And that's how it goes. I mean, I'm not gonna tell you the end of the film, but
Oh, that's all right.
yeah, there you go. Facebook
Yeah.
abandoned an
Yeah.
experiment.
Oh, it's
Facebook
Facebook.
abandoned an experiment after two artificially intelligent programs appeared to be chatting to each other in a strange language that only they understood. The two chatbots came to create their own changes to English that made it easier for them to work, but which remained mysterious to the humans that supposedly looked after them. So yeah, they just started switching up. They started streamlining English into a slightly different language that made it easier for them to understand, and then we stopped understanding them.
It's like
That makes me feel
Esperanto.
freaky,
It's like a
Nokia and English mix-up.
Yeah,
it's like a language only twins teach each other.
Yeah, exactly. Like kind of like secret sibling language they were just developing. But that is freaky. I mean, for that to be the first time you see something like this happening, like hey, like those, you know, those programs that we created, like they're speaking, but they've changed. We don't know what they're saying anymore, and that's a scary thing. And that's only gonna surely have got weirder now, like in the background. You
Oh yeah,
know what I mean?
oh it
Yeah.
must have done. It must have done. But I mean, at the same time, it's kind of it's like you guys were saying before. It's like you know, even if someone tried to stop it, there's too much human interest in it now for it to be stopped, and too
Right.
much
Yeah,
money. You know what I mean?
it's not getting stopped.
Yeah, I mean, like it was only what 6 months ago though. You had Elon Musk and all those people coming out with a big open campaign to say it needs to slow down. Yeah,
Yeah.
Man, it was about a
so what
year
is it?
ago. It was almost a year. I think it was a
Yeah,
year, maybe even
maybe a
more.
year ago. Yeah, but it's
Yeah.
like
Because
they knew what was going on behind the scenes, man. That's the reason they were seeing shit that we weren't. That was before the big wave of public access. That was before people had their hands in it. Because everybody's like, well, what is he talking about? Why is he trying to make laws against this?
Exactly. It's like everyone was used to their Alexa, and then in the last 6 to 8 months, like that's been swapped out by this completely different responsive intelligence that people just have. As they're like, you know, w when they're on their web browser, they just got a tab open for GPT or something like that. It's become normal so quickly. And it's like so much more advanced than the AIs that we were using before with things like Alexa and Siri. Like they just feel like dinosaur technology when you're trying to talk to them now because they can't respond rapidly and naturally. Whereas these can, and it's just happened so fast. And like, you know, it just makes me think about the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, man, because it feels like the Android integration's coming now, and yeah, it's gonna get weird. It's gonna get super weird.
Well, you gotta remember too, I always tell everybody that Siri was like a hand-me-down from DARPA to Apple. Siri was like,
people might not know that.
DARPA was like, we don't need this anymore. You go Apple in like 2004 or something, right? 2005. There you go. You can have this. And it's like, okay, so you had this for 20 years and, decided to just bequeath it to the populations. So what else are you sitting on, And then the thing about Amazon, which gets me, is that for all these years, they've been recording all this voice data from all over the world, for people from all of different languages. Amazon had its biggest investment ever of like $3 or $4 billion, right? Or something. They bought Claude, basically. Not bought, but, invested in Claude, Anthropic. And, everybody's like, Amazon's behind. And it's like, dude, for now, but they're sitting on the largest data trove that for this AI that once they integrate it, I mean, it's going to be nonstop because they've literally been data mining the planet for years, right? So it's going to be nuts when that happens, right? It's going to be real time.
We've had Alexa inside our kitchen for the last, I don't know, what, 4 years or something. So we've
That's
seen that
definitely heard some mad shit coming from you.
a bit. You know what? In real life, I'm pretty well behaved. Yeah, like, it's my wife got to the point where she was just like, I don't want to hear any more of this fucking
You
shit.
shut up, yeah.
Just talk about normal stuff, please.
I get it. Actually, that's something I've been talking about recently is like the whole burnout effect.
Oh, yeah.
UFO burnout effect specifically, because, you know, it's like after a while, people just start turning on each other and bickering and arguing when not enough is coming out. And it's definitely in a little bit of a plateau. Although the document, the drop was interesting. I saw, John, I saw you kind of gave a little bit of a breakdown on that in terms
yeah.
of like reposting some of the specifics on it, because it's kind of been taken a bit out of context, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, everybody thought, like, this is the doc, this is all gospel, this is what happened, because it was a special, that's special.
It was a wave sap.
Yeah, sure. And but basically, it was just like a pitch deck. Ben, the only reason you can gather that is because there's another PDF that was released at the same time, and it's on the Arrow site, that basically says, hey, this was, we found out about this because people came in and told us about it. So we went digging and we found this, and then we found that this was not even, you know, this was basically the pitch, and no money and no funds were, you know, directed to this.
Do we know who actually pitched it? Do we know who's responsible for this document, who wrote it, who pitched to DHS?
I'm not sure. I don't know
I know that some of the, like, the skeptical group is assuming that it's got to be like the NIDS, Bigelow, ATIP group, like, you know, that's push this into DHS, and then 6 months later DHS kind of goes, we haven't really seen anything from this, so we're gonna stop it. And I so was it actually actioned as a program, but then 6 months down the line they canceled it, or was it just like never actually put into,
from what I understand, I don't think it was ever actually put in. It was actually ran as a program. I think it was, they were looking for money. I think the initial NOA, who's the Mormon, I'm forgetting right now, the other Senate, not Bigelow.
Harry Reid.
Who's
the Mormon? Who's the other Mormon? I mean, there are so many of them in the U.S.
Yeah, we got a few hours.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. It was Reid. Yeah, it was the Reid, the benchmark, you know, the money for. Then I think after that, it was basically the pitch to keep the thing going, and then it didn't. But who's to say it didn't? You know, I don't know. That could just be smokescreen, but it's interesting that they're at least listening to the people who are coming in, because they couldn't find that shit, right? On their own, Arrow, they had to get that from somebody to say, hey, this is a thing, when they looked into it and was like, well, it didn't happen. But did it happen under a different name? Did it happen under a different program? Well, is it a completely wave sap, you know?
Like, well, you say they're just pitches, right? Like, so it's kind of like, you know, it's a request for money for a research project. I mean, I haven't read it, I'm not going to say that, but from what I've heard you guys saying, and then that gets leaked, even though nothing's ever been actioned on it, and it gives people to talk about, stuff to talk about, doesn't it?
It's kind of like the way that I'm looking at it. I mean, we don't know who specifically is responsible for like pitching this, but if it is like the TTSA group or the NIDS group, which is kind of the same thing, it to me it would say that, right, well, Tudor Stars Academy happened, so like this happened in the past. But the fact that they came out with TTSA and tried to get materials from the public and tried to jumpstart it publicly kind of makes me think that this probably didn't go anywhere, because these all feel like attempts at getting something going, right? These all feel like attempts, from Skinwalker Ranch and the NIDS group to this potential, DHS proposal. It feels like the same type of desire to get this open and talked about. And then maybe the final response has been a public one with TTSA, and it's the same group. Again, we don't know if it is the group that is responsible for the document, but I would kind of wager it probably is, and they do reference ATIP a couple of times in the document. So, like, I don't know, man. Like, is it just spinning stories, or is it something that, like, a core group actually have knowledge of and are trying to get out? It's really hard to know, but...
What's your gut tell you? I mean, you're balls deep in all this, man. Like, what's your gut to tell you about it?
I mean, my gut tells me that there is like genuinely something to be found within like the classified area of the government and maybe within the aerospace world, but I really still just don't know. Like, I'm pretty agnostic on whether or not they have like fully recovered vehicles and stuff. Like, I don't think there's good enough evidence to say that that's absolutely 100% true, and I think that this subject is so powerful in terms of its psychological leverageability, in terms of being able to spin stories and influence things in certain ways, that I'm open to the idea that the most of this is lies. Like, most of it is just complete, like, you know, disinformation and stories over time. But like, to do what? To cover up what? To kind of obscure us from what? Because as someone who's like experienced something, I know that there's a reality to unknown phenomena of some form that we can't understand and describe right now. Whether or not that translates to literal vehicles in special access programs, that's a completely different ballpark to me. So like, I'm open to the idea of there being something because I've seen something, but the whole government reverse engineering program, UFO crash retrieval thing, I just worry it's a big old psyop, you know?
I get it. And I think that's the thing. So like, one of the biggest things that I always try to remember, and it's funny to you think about it, is that, you know, everybody was like, oh, did we really go to the moon? Like, did we go to the moon? Like, it was all faked. All of it was faked, you know, we didn't go to the moon. And then, you know, what was the goal of that? It's to get everybody to think there's a conspiracy that, you know, we never made it to the moon, when that's complete misdirection. And what the hell did we find, and why didn't we go back, and why aren't we back? Right. I mean, so it's something that happened. It's something that is happening, or, you know, whatever, but you're completely spun in a way to look at it from a different perspective that they don't want you to look at.
That's kind of what I'm saying, man. That's what I'm saying. Is
yeah. Like, yeah. I think this is the same thing, right?
Right hand is saying Lockheed Martin and reverse engineering programs. What's the left hand doing, and what's that talking about? Especially because once you do your research on this, as you both know, so much of it echoes back to the esoteric and the mystical. And it's like, well, all right, so what's really going on with this phenomena? And is there even an ability to obtain materials from it?
I know that back in the 70s, the Scientologists were pretending to be the CIA and attacking people that have tried to take down the idea of the Psy stuff. So anybody who kind of came out and was like, Psy's not real, yeah? RV's not real. They would then come in. They had a program called, what was it called? Humanity Hostility. I'll find it and send it over to you, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a whole program where it was like, what we'll do is we'll represent ourselves as being from the CIA, or insinuate that's what we are, and we'll bring down every single skeptic from a viewpoint of that we are the CIA, which will then make the skeptics go, well, why are the CIA doing this, yeah? Mm. And it was a ruse to keep the dream alive of this psychic kind of ability, yeah? So in terms of, like, you know, if you wanted to hijack a lot of this stuff, and obviously a lot of these people are government people, you know, but a lot of them, you can't prove whether they are or not. I mean, a lot of these people who say that's CIA, we've got no idea, yeah? I mean, like, they don't prove it. They say, well, yeah, I'm GS-15 or whatever, and or whatever it is that their security classification may be. There's never any real proof from that neck of the woods. It's not like a soldier or somebody from the direct military who gives you their credentials, because most of the time they don't have it. They have other people backing them up, saying, yes, they were. I've seen them there when I was at, you know, the Pentagon or whatever. But then it's like, well, you're equally as shadowy, and we've got no evidence about you either, yeah? Mm-hmm. So you can see how it's quite easy to actually pretend to be from those places and never actually have been.
I was looking that up. I couldn't find, like, the particular reference to what you were saying about, like, pretending to be the CIA, but I did just find a document on the CIA's FOIA library that says... they found 9 members of the Church of Scientology guilty of various roles in a massive criminal conspiracy to plant church spies in government agencies, break into government offices, and electronically bug at least 1 internal service meeting. So, you know, that's off the CIA's FOIA website, just talking about infiltration of Scientology. So, yeah, man.
Well, the program they were running, I've just found it. I've just started a quick look at my notes. It was called Program Humanist Humiliation. Look that up. And that basically tells you all there is to know about it. So, like, hang on, let's find it.
Humanist Humiliation.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll read you a little extract. A book.
Yeah.
A lot of people were like, this take away the author. This is from James Randi.
The amazing James Randi?
The amazing James Randi. He wrote the Debunking Bible, Flim Flam, it's called, yeah?
Yeah, Flim
Flam. But in late 1979, a Toronto newspaper reporter was looking through the Scientology files seized by the US government and made available in Washington. These were the records upon which the successful federal case was based. And the newsman came upon a sheaf of documents headed, in true science fiction comic book style, Guardian Program Order 1074. It concerned a confidential order issued in England to the worldwide offices of the Scientology Church, and they called it Program Humanist Humiliation. This was a plan to handle terminatedly the Committee of the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal and the Skeptical Inquirer, the official journal of the SCICOP, which is, what I just referred to there, they kicked the paranormal society. And then it goes on to say, recipients were cautioned in this semi-literate document that security must be maintained so that there is no comeback. The idea was to create the impression that the CSICOP was supported by the US Central Intelligence Agency. Thus, Scientologists reasoned the public would believe that the CIA was attempting to monopolize Psy research and keep it ultra secret. And from the Scientologist's point of view, discrediting the CSICOP was essential, since the Hubbard nonsense is dependent on a belief in the paranormal. Another angle of Order 1074 was to convince the leaders of major religions that the CSICOP was out to get them too, and this was to be done by circulating bogus letters on CIA letterheads. Although the whole fairy tale seems to have failed to get off the ground, several fake letters were sent out on duplicated CSICOP letterheads, but they were pretty obvious forgeries. So they were attempting to push this myth that the CIA were pushing forward with all this psi work when it was actually the Scientologists. Crazy, man.
Wow. I think there's got to be a law for impersonating a federal agent. I think that's a law. I think it's illegal to do that.
Yeah, well, they got in big trouble. They got raided and everything, and had all their files taken at one point. But
easy, man.
Yeah,
but Ingo Swann was a Scientologist, and El Putoff was at one time, right? And so
When I was in LA, I saw that big, you know, the main building that they have in Hollywood. They've got like, you know, armed guards with like semi-automatic machine guns, like walking around the whole thing like a compound. It's wild.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, look at the money.
I mean, there's so much material out there to read about. I mean, like, but it's another one of those areas that people kind of shy away from because they're obviously pretty scary. They can get scary. They can get prejudiced. Harass you and stuff. So much of
ufology traces back to, you know, Scientology and other movements that are similar to it that Scientology got its influence from, like, you know, the Theosophical movements and things that you know about. So, you know, it's part of the discussion whether people like it or not.
Yeah, you go take it back to like the Babylon working. So people are into the esoteric UFO stuff. They get into Jack Parsons and out in the desert with L. Ron Hubbard, founder of Scientology, trying to open a portal to another dimension and bring through the Scarlet Woman, and you know, but then it's kind of like, but people, a lot of people, sort of story ends there for them and they just carry it down the Parsons route and they forget the fact that Hubbard was involved.
Tell people all the way about that, man, because not many people know this stuff, like in terms of like L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons and the kind of things that they were up to, why it relates to ufology. Like, this is, again, it's like we said, it's part of the discussion, but it's not really discussed very often. So if people are wondering what it is, can you give a bit more of a story behind like their relationship?
Parsons was obviously a rocket scientist. He was investigating new propulsion techniques, and he was working on rocketry. So he was also the head of the American OTO at the time. So he was directly reporting back to Crowley back in the UK about his findings and his magical workings.
OTO.
But anyway, so...
Oh, for people that don't know, OTO is...
Orientis, which was the society set up by Aleister Crowley, ceremonial magician. And so was Jack Parsons. Jack Parsons was making rockets for NASA, essentially.
JPL means Jack Parsons Laboratory, or Jack Parsons. Yeah, see, I'm probably wrong too, but Jack Parsons, whatever, that's what GP.
Yeah.
Propulsion Laboratory is Jack Parsons. Yeah, that's what he created. Yeah.
he was working on that stuff, but he was also obviously into the big time into the magic ritual stuff, and he became friends with L. Ron Hubbard. Some people say that maybe L. Ron Hubbard was sent as part of the Office of Naval Intelligence to infiltrate him.
Yeah, there was a suspicion that he was selling rocket secrets to the Israelis at one point.
The Israelis, I remember. Yeah.
Aleister Crowley was MI5, right? He was an informant for MI5.
He was multiple. Like, people say that he was probably MI5, probably did a little bit of work for the Nazis at one point, probably did some work for Mossad, you know what I mean? He was all over the place.
He just hoarded it out in more ways than one.
But yeah, so Parsons, via a guy called, I think it was Frank Molina, who had the connections back to Israel, whose family, bizarrely, later on were to marry into the Maxwell family, Ghislaine Maxwell and that lot. So it all gets a little tangled. But anyway, going back to Jack Parsons, he then was trying to do this work in a magical ritual where he'd raise the Scarlet Woman.
What's the Scarlet Woman?
Babylon, like the destroyer, I suppose. I mean,
the Red Witch.
So it's like some old Babylonian ritual they were trying to do.
Yeah, so like that. And then the opening of this portal would open it, you know, bring this woman. And he believed that the woman was then brought to him, like, you know, sometime later. I don't know what the period of time was, but not too long, in the form of a lady called Marjorie Cameron, who he then had an affair with and fell in love with, yeah? But anyway, L. Ron Hubbard was the other half of that little duo doing all of that magic stuff out in the desert. So he then, after all that had gone off, L. Ron Hubbard then apparently stole all his money and his girlfriend and fucked off. Yeah.
Yeah.
And L. Ron, little player.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he just took it all basically and messed Jack Parsons over. And Jack Parsons went on to blow himself up in an experiment he was doing in his basement or whatever, and that was that.
Allegedly.
Some people think that all of this Babylonian ritualistic desert practice that L. Ron and Parsons were doing may be responsible for the sudden influx of UFOs, right? And they were successful in opening some form of a doorway, and that this is why we suddenly had a massive UFO flap.
What do you think?
I don't believe anything. Like, all of these are just campfire stories, in my opinion. Like, you know, it's all stuff that people say was happening, and, you know, yeah, they're like, okay, they were out there doing some crazy weird rituals, but, you know, is that responsible for that? I don't know, man. Like,
if
anything, I would be more tempted to lean towards the detonation of atomic weaponry and that being something, you know, like a signature to someone. But who knows? Maybe they did open up a Babylonian portal with their weird desert magic.
I watched a guy who was like the former head of the OTO on one of these. I think it's called A Scanner Darkly. It's a YouTube channel, and I saw him talking at one time about this, and him and I can't remember who he was speaking with, but they were talking about, you know, I don't think that portal was ever closed. Do you want to go with me into the desert and close it? And the guy was like, no. It's like, no, I don't want to go. So there was like some kind of, you know, back and forth about it not being, you know, closed at the time. And then, you know, obviously it's coming through. But
you've seen that that place, like, I can't remember which desert it's in, but it's nicknamed the gateway or the doorway to hell. And it's like a natural gas leak. It's like a natural gas leak. And
is it Russia? Yeah. Is it Russia or one of the Eastern Bloc countries?
No, I think it's a hot country, I think, because it's in like a hot desert somewhere. But they were digging and they accidentally disrupted a natural gas leak like 60, 70 years ago or something. And it's just
it's still burning
ever since. It's just going. It's just this crater of like fire and brimstone, man.
Well, you know, the idea that like you get the natural gases and vapors coming out of the earth, like, you know, when you go back to like, you hear like the Oracle of Delphi.
Go on, tell me a bit more about it.
It was like the idea that there was like these mystical women who were able to give prophecy. So people would visit them and they would ask them questions and they'd be told these answers, you know. But they were, from what I can work out, it was like one of these sort of natural gas outlets there, yeah? And they were like, I'll fit it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They're just locking the gas.
Like,
the gas and getting insight.
Yeah. Just, and then giving insight. Yeah. And it was like, so you get into this idea that it's like volcanic kind of vapors, brimstone. And like,
oh, man.
And like, yeah, I mean, summoning answers from some of the trance state brought on by, I guess it's a drug thing, isn't it? You know, it's like it's a drug state, it's a trance state.
Well, yeah. it always is, right? Like it always is, whether it's a psychoactively induced thing or like a transcendentally meditatively induced thing. It's always a shift in conscious perception that then facilitates some form of information flow. So. Huffing on volcanic gas fumes, sure, why not? If that's what gets you,
why not?
don't knock it till you tried it, man. You know, it could be the shit. You know, I don't know.
Sadly, don't mess your head over that fume tunnel. Like, don't tell me anything right now. But like the oracles of Delphi, is that Greek or is that Spartan or like?
It's I'll get it. I'll get the details up. I mean, you heard the saying, "Know thyself."
Yeah, know thyself. Yeah, yeah.
Eleusinian mysteries, the Eleusinian.
That's Greek, isn't it?
Know thyself is a philosophical maxim inscribed upon the temple of Apollo in the ancient Greek precinct of Delphi. So yeah, it was at Delphi.
Yeah.
So this is where people went up there. So if you get into like the Oracle of Delphi,
it's the Eleusinian.
Well, is it still up for debate what they were using as the sacrament, right? And I think there was some speculation that it might be Amanita muscaria. That they were using in the temple rituals, but
there's been mushrooms found at various countries around the world, like even in Egypt and stuff, I think, alongside hashish for ritual purposes.
Yeah,
The Delphi people, like so this is off World History. It says the Oracle of Delphi was known as the Pythia, and was the priestess who held court at Pytho, the sanctuary of the Delphinians, a sanctuary dedicated to the Greek god Apollo. The Pythia were highly regarded for what it was believed that she channeled prophecies from Apollo himself while steeped in a dreamlike trance.
Yeah. Up in them fumes.
Up in those fumes, mate, yeah.
But they're all they're all virgins and they're all redheads and they were all...
I think that's just a scene in 300.
No, it's yes, it is, but
or something else.
Yeah. 300.5. It's a different movie. I think that's what it was, though. Honestly, yeah. There's a big sexual component to it too. I can't remember what it was, but
this is again like this to me is, and I love when Graham Hancock talks about this, like the war on consciousness, because.
Yeah,
it's a war on consciousness. Everything that we do that's been sacred and like kind of sacramental and like held through time as important is involving some form of change of state, right? And we've been doing that for so long, and only recently have we gone into this societal structure that really tightly channels our ability to explore our own consciousness, like really restricts it into a very kind of reinforced corridor of perception everyone has to agree on and participate in. And that's not been the normal state of play for humanity for, you know, thousands of years. So I think that we're in like a kind of like a Renaissance period and what Terence McKenna would call the archaic revival of bringing some of these things back from the ancient past. It's happening more now than ever, like psychedelics coming back into play. All of these things are starting to resurface is really important. So I'm hopeful for lessons of the past coming back now.
You're right. I mean, in this country, obviously, it's easy to see. If you didn't follow the news and use the internet, basically, like you'd probably think, well, psychedelics are completely illegal. We're never going to see them because they are in this country. Yeah. Whereas in America, obviously, you've got states legalizing them. There's people taking DMT out of vape pens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you can go and visit the machine elves for any day of the night legally, yeah? Any time of the day or night, sorry. And like, that's insane. Like, you know, the concept that you could get like a 16-year-old sat in his bedroom, gets hold of a DMT pen and just takes DMT a few times a week. It's like, and becomes a little Timothy Leary before he's even turned 18, yeah? And then comes out and says, you know, I've literally sat in the room with God. And like, these are wild times that's okay. You know, obviously not for a 16-year-old.
Well, do you remember that video? I think it was from like the 1950s or 60s. It was like a black and white video of a kid who had been taking LSD, and his mom was really worried about it, and they were talking to the doctors. Dude, yeah. Right? I mean, like, well, I feel so sorry for that kid, because he's just like, no, like God is everything. Like, I understand now that, and she's like, he's talking crazy. I just don't understand what we have to do. Like, in the doctor's like, well, he's clearly lost his mind, and it's just like,
it's totally making sense, and he's like talking absolute sense.
Right? He's making so much sense, and you just sit there like, bro, it was in the wrong time, like wrong time,
yeah,
but not ready for knowledge.
I think that before you used the drug, you were afraid of people.
Well, I didn't know it at the time, but I realized that I was when I took the drug, because it brings out your inner feelings more intensely.
And why do you think you were afraid of them before?
Because I didn't know them.
Do you feel that you do know them through the drug?
No, I don't feel that I know them, but I'm not afraid of being rejected by them. Because I don't feel any rejection towards them. I used to be constantly thinking about being afraid of them, but now I don't have to be afraid anymore, because they're all beautiful, and whether they reject me or not, they're still beautiful.
Does it ever seem to you that this may be a little unreal?
Oh, yes. But I mean, after you learn this on an acid trip, you practice it when you're straight, too.
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't leave you.
If everybody is beautiful, then there's no one who's, say, dangerous to you.
Oh, but the dangerous people are beautiful, too. They're dangerous, sure, but they're still beautiful.
Why are you here?
Well, it's a long story, but I'll try to break it down in short. I found God, and I made me feel quite good, you know, and my mother mistook this good feeling for taking drugs, and I was getting kind of wayward and everything. I mean, I wasn't coming home on time, so she phoned the police, and I was brought to YGC, and then I was brought here. Because of my talking about God and everything, they might have thought that I was a little crazy.
Do you think you are?
No. But I understand how they felt, because I wasn't making myself clear on it. It's very hard to... I was trying to express something that was hard to express, and I wasn't really capable of expressing it. I mean, I can have the relationship between myself and God, but it's a mistake to try to make other people feel the way I did, and that's what I was trying to do.
I can't describe to you the feeling that it gives you when your son says to you, "Can't you feel it? God is everywhere. I'm going with God. I'm waiting for God to come and get me." It isn't a happy thing at all, or an inside, it's a death wish. And I tried talking sense to him. I said, "Jimmy, you don't see God till you die." But he couldn't see that at all. He believed that he was seeing it right now.
You know, it's like, oh man, it's like that Bill Hicks sketch, you know, where he talks about the kid on LSD. If the news was talking about positive stories and positive drug stories, it's like, you know, a kid on LSD realized that we're all just slow vibrational atomic frequencies coherently back with each other in an infinite cascade of universal consciousness. Now here's Tom with the weather. Like, that would be such a nice world to live in, right?
Well, I think that's why it was banned, man. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, at some point, there was a collective effort to everybody be like, we can't have people waking up, right? Yeah. We can't have people challenging what our paradigm is.
Yeah, the Vietnam War, and you know, there was so much going on in that time period where the government didn't want a counterculture, so it was just like it was bound to happen, right? This propaganda war against it in the 60s and 70s, and then it just propagated on from there, you know.
Well, that's another thing that if you look at it from the other side, I mean, John Luke, you've done research into this too, is that the CIA basically created the whole hippie movement and the whole counterculture movement, right? But they also, on the same part of that, were trying to use all of those psychogenetic drugs for a weapon, right? For mind control or for truth serum or shit like that. And they were doing that publicly. I mean, it's the famous story. They gave LSD to one of these guys, and he jumped out of the window. And
it was Frank Olson, or... Yeah, it was more. He was, you know, working with them as well. You know, was,
yeah. And then they lied to his family forever. And then after like 40 years or something, they finally came back and said, "Oh yeah, well, we dosed him, and he didn't know, and he killed himself. So sorry about that." Yeah, and that was like 40 years later. His kids grew up, you know, like this bullshit. So it's like, and then they, you know, they were Tim, and they were just handing LSD to Timothy Leary so that he would hand it out. There's videos that have come out recently of him with a bunch of other people and the CIA, like talking about all this shit back then, right? When it was all going on. So
like, I know there's leveraging it for like MK Ultra and things like this, but trying to fuel the counterculture movement, or is the counterculture movement just a kind of escape from the lab consequence that they didn't expect, where it's now into society?
I think they really flooded it. Like, there was, one of the little offshoots of the Mellon family dedicated a mansion to these hippies, right? And Timothy Leary would swing by and just dose everyone with acid. Yeah? We've seen any of that.
There is.
Yeah. You don't know about that. Like, there's like one of the Mellons who was a bit of a hippie. He ended up being a big supporter of Timothy Leary and those guys. And he had basically donated a mansion to the movement, which, you know, big, big old grand building, like a beautiful American house. And, you know, painted with Buddhas all over it. The Philosopher's Stone logo and all that stuff. And they all, like, you know, did the hippie thing there, took loads of acid. And, you know, I think that the guy coming out of that was manufacturing a ton of it as well. And it was a big thing. And it was like the start of the counterculture. It was like really pushing it. Yeah. And, but meanwhile, I think that a big part of what was going on from the spooks' point of view was that you had a very febrile society where it was like you got lots of wars going off, you know, Vietnam, and there's people who essentially, it's like, we're going to have a revolution in this country if we don't change the way people think, and quickly. Mm-hmm. So they changed it to flower power as opposed to gun power, I suppose. So it was like, it got to the point where it was people just going, well, if, you know, we do our sit-ins and we protest and we take loads of acid and we have our festivals and we put pressure on society that way and become the counterculture, it's better than them turning into like a military operation and starting a civil war, isn't it?
Yeah, so like almost kind of counter to the government's intentions in foreign policy in Vietnam, the CIA's bigger picture of like, well, we need to actually maintain civility within our own homeland, so we've got to fuel counterculture, like a pseudo counterculture movement.
Mm-hmm.
So people have the feeling that they're fighting the power when really... Yeah. We're reinforcing it, but we're creating, you know what, which is funny because that's happening today in so many different ways.
Well, it's because people are, you know, I mean, I'm all about the peace of love, man. Like, genuinely. But like, the more people become passive, the less likely they're ever going to stand up against the oppressors. And the peace and love movement's good, but when it's set in an environment of an oppressive society, it is purely just a movement for yourself to make yourself feel better, really, because, you know, like, we're still governed by people that aren't peace and love and aren't children of the flowers, and like, you know, they aren't about that. They allow us to be if we want to be.
How comfortable is your peace and love when it's won through blood and war?
Exactly. So it's like, I don't know, it's a weird one, but then if you get into like back to like the woo-woo and like the UFOs and all that, you get into back to Andrea Puarich, Nine and all that. But his original focus was Amanita Muscaria, like the magic mushroom. So prior to all that stuff going off, he was, you know, sourcing magic mushrooms, doing tests on them and stuff.
Is this
so lots of people.
The guy who did the
channeling? The Nine, yeah, Puarich, the one who was working with Uri Geller, and he was the one who introduced Uri Geller to the West.
Mm-hmm.
Parapsychologist, like ethnobotanist kind of dude. Like,
he invented a lot. He had a lot of weird inventions with tooth.
He's the guy that was making the transistors that fit inside teeth. You know about all this? So like, So this is where you get into the idea that people were fucked with in dentists. Offices. So people would end up in the dentist. And a prime example of this is the Oklahoma City bomber. His name, Tim
Leary.
Oh, yeah.
No, not Timothy Leary.
Yeah, man, like, we talk about him loads.
Yeah. It's coming. You'll close to me about it. Timothy McVeigh.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. Timothy McVeigh. Mm-hmm. So he apparently had been to the dentist, like, prior to him committing this bombing, something like 75 times in the 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously, yeah. Through the army dentist. And they reckon that there's an idea that maybe he was being programmed. Yeah. Like, there's something in his tooth basically sending signals.
What were they giving as excuses for, like, yeah, this is like the 74th time I'm going to the dentist?
And there's a book by a lady called Wendy Payton.
Yeah.
Which goes really deep into it. She really covers all this.
Wow.
But like, but Puharich was the guy who invented it. All right. Mm. But he then obviously brought Uri Geller to this country and started, you know, showing him off as being the world's leading psychic. And then mm-hmm. he's able to read minds and he can do all this stuff. But with a tooth visit, a receiver,
mm-hmm.
Talking to him. So if you wanted to, he could be just feeding you information, yeah? So if you were RVing, for example, and poor Arich knew what the target was, so you'd be going, it's a red car, mate, with mountains in the background.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a red car with mountains in the background.
Yeah.
Oh, like tooth to skull voiced.
Yeah. It vibrates your jaw. It's like the gyro.
And then you start hearing the voice in your head, just like, this is God.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go and destroy this building.
This is the thing with, like, targeted individuals.
Right? Yeah, yeah. It goes into that whole genre.
Yeah, like that whole rabbit hole. And it's difficult because, I mean, you want to just say they're crazy when people are saying that they're hearing things and that they're, you know, being spied on by the government or their toasters listening to them and stuff. And it's like, you know, there's a whole group of that kind of demographic where you're like, I don't know if I want to believe it. But then if technologies exist like this, then it's like, okay, well, maybe there are choice experiments done on the public. It's not the first.
Oh, yeah.
It's like really not the first time the public has been experimented on. We have so many cases of that, including a recent one. But, you know, it's just like, it's creepy, man, but there's maybe some truth to it.
There's a lot of truth to it. The part about that, too, the thing that we get, the Puharich patent, you can look it up and see that the transceiver, the two thing, it was like 47, 9, 8, something like 1947. But anyways, at one point, there's even a video out there where they've implanted something in a bull's skull, right? And that was part of Puharich's thing, too. It was like an electrode in there. And it had like a receiver that was wireless, and this bull is charging this guy, and they just like flip this switch, and the bull just stops. And then following that, they're like, we've already figured out we don't even need that transceiver. We don't need to implant it anymore. We can just beam it at people and control their behavior and all this shit.
Is that Jose Delgado, like, when you start... let's have a look. Yeah, Jose Delgado, Spanish professor of neurophysiology at Yale, famed for his research on mind control. He was the guy, I think he was working with that, the ball and all that. He was putting stuff, you know, same stuff, chips into the brain to control people, mind control. But yeah, Jose Delgado, he's worth looking into.
But then they're like, we don't even need to implant it. We don't even need to be near you. We can just beam it at your head.
I mean, like, that's true. I mean, if you don't even, and to be honest, it probably is. Yeah, so like, okay, so it, like saying that's true, it's just so easy to simulate like anomalous experiences, like
the UFO abduction.
Michael Persinger, like another scientist, he was able to replicate holy experiences, religious experiences in people.
This is
like that helmet, God helmet,
But that wasn't him feeding people that ideas. It was literally just stimulating the right synapses, and it would create a feeling that God was with you and that you were talking to some huge omnipotent being or whatever. And the idea that you're actually, you know, having a full-blown spiritual experience just by stimulating synapses.
And how
crazy.
Magnets, rotating magnets.
How old is that? Like, how old is that technological proposal from this guy?
70s or something like that.
Yeah. Maybe. I have one. I built one.
Well, is it the God helmet?
Yeah, well, that's a little bit version of it. Let me see. Hold on.
Take it out. Yeah,
I got it. It's right here.
This is what I'm saying, man. Like, it's just too easy to simulate things.
Here.
So much of it could be, you know, technologically induced.
And when it does get to that level where it's like John was saying, if you don't even need kit to do it anymore, well, look, there you go. He's made one.
Look at that thing. Looks dangerous.
Yeah, it's... So Museum of Tarot is a really... I know I've told you guys about that dude all the time. He's got a TikTok channel and a YouTube channel and shit. But this is an Arduino. It's just a little tiny microprocessor, right? That you just put a program in. And this is like a breadboard where literally you're just pushing shit in there. But this is a shower curtain. But inside the shower curtain, which is what puts it on your head. Let's see. I got it unplugged
this
already.
This is looking like the most tinfoil hat shit. Like this is the most conspiracy theory looking video.
If you want it to look crazy, then you've done it. Man.
Nah. You just look incredibly French.
You're still really very, very, very loose Frenchman.
So hang on. Explain what this blue mushroom hat's supposed to do.
All right. So what it is actually, it's like wound, right? So this is wound copper wire, and it's wound around this whole entire thing, right? And basically, it's two wires. One is wound one way, left, right, and the other one's wound the other. And you take these two things and these coils, they plug into this breadboard, which basically is a little transistor. And all this shit is like $40, right? You can buy all that on Amazon. There's like literally, a build sheet. And he's got a video, the tutorial that takes you right through it. And what it does is it goes through, and then you put a little program on this little device, and you can turn it on, and it's powered by like 3.9 volts or something like that, right? And basically what it does is it induces a current, an electromagnetic current, switching current from one side to the other side. So it's activating parts in your brain. So it's swirling a electromagnetic current around your head. And what it's supposedly doing is interacting parts of your brain to turn them on and off, or to like open up, perception, right? So it's a really cheap version of the God helmet. The God helmet is like, specific, points all over your bread, but this is basically opening you up to basically shutting off the left side of your brain. It's allowing the right side of the brain to take over, right? Yeah. So you're supposed to like meditate, and then, you can listen to binaural beats or something, but the Monroe Institute, you can listen to that kind of thing. So he actually, the guy from Zimatero did it, he put this all out there, and he did like a global experiment where he had a bunch of people do this an RV, right? This is a few months ago, and to see what they would see. And it was just kind of like blind, right? So everybody would just email them back. There was like a survey, right? So everybody did it on a certain day, certain time. And it is entrainment too. So he said that Persinger did this where, this is kind of cool, it was this technology right here where they have somebody in one room who never played this video game before, kind of knows how a video game is. And then somebody else who's like the shit at this video game, like Donkey Kong or whatever, right? Just making something up. So both people had this helmet on, or this thing, right? And basically it was transferring the knowledge or whatever from the guy who was doing really well in the video game to the guy who had no idea what he was doing. So the guy was like controlled too. So the guy's like playing this game, like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, whatever, whatever. So then they're like, okay, turn this thing on, hanging out. And this guy all of a sudden is just rocking it.
Wow. That's cool.
So it was brought about, I think, as Ingo Swann at one point. I don't know if he was working for Persinger or not. He might have been, but I could be wrong. But anyways, it was basically trying to use people that are highly psychic or intuitives or whatever, and pass that gift or whatever via this technology to other people, right?
Yeah.
And supposedly it worked. Supposedly.
What have you found with yours then? Have you experienced anything?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's
mild electrocution.
Yeah, it's like
I'm getting close. I got
two weeks later.
You need to like retrofit it into something cooler than a shower cap. You need to create like some sort of like metallic crown or like
I was thinking like a sombrero, like just a big sombrero,
anything.
You need a pyramid with an all-seeing eye on top.
Yeah, oh, there you go. Like the big Crowley pyramid.
Yeah, like the Crowley hat. The Crowley hat with this on it, you'd look brilliant, right?
Yeah.
You can come to contact in the desert with me and
start selling these things.
Yeah, dude. That's it. You could set up a little stall and you could sell
next to the crystal lady.
Little small print just saying, if it don't work, it means you're not the very psychic.
So. Yeah. Exactly. There's always a loophole with spiritual new age technology. You're just not open enough. It's a gift.
You're just not open.
My bad. Your chakras are blocked. It's not my fault. Your chakras are fucked.
You've got a lot of spiritual work to do, man.
Oh, man. Don't I know it?
Don't I know?
I don't know. It does give you, like, I didn't get visions or anything, but I mean, you're trying to meditate with it, and it kind of,
I think it's like anything, man. It's like, you know, some people will listen to binaural tones and they'll be, like, it really helps ground me. And I get this amazing feeling that resonates through me. And then other people will listen to them and just be like, that sounds like a refrigerator. Like, what the fuck? Like,
right.
And so it just, to be fair, this is the loophole, but it's kind of true. Like, if you're not open to certain things, then there's just not going to be that resonance with it. But, you know, I think that I think it does come down to that more than anything. It's less the thing.
I think intention and belief.
Magic.
Like, I know that when I really went for it, because now I'm so far from that in terms of, you know, I just wouldn't be able to do it. It takes a lot of work to get into those sorts of states. But I remember, like, you know, before COVID and during COVID and stuff, like, I was so heavy into it and I really went for it. I was like, you know, I'll follow all the right protocols for meditation. You know, I will do everything right. I'll learn the breathing techniques. I'll do my best to get good at this and really go for it. And you see stuff, like, you start to experience other things, yeah? But it's all about your intention and your belief. If you actually believe that you're going to try hard to get to a different altered state, and you actually practice it properly, stuff happens. It just does, yeah? But, like, without that, it's like I say, like, I mean, then it happened. Now, I can't even fathom it. It wouldn't happen for me, you know? Like, I find meditation really hard.
Dude, I mean, like, I get you on that. Like, people ask me if I'm still doing that kind of stuff and trying to, you know, get contact with the orbs, and I'm not, and kind of in a similar boat to you. Like, I just don't know what I really believe to be the ultimate thing with that, and so I've kind of lost what I had previously, which was like a really strong, just like you, and it's a similar time period as well, which was like 2019, like the lockdown period, and I had such a strong belief in a very specific thing, and it worked. Like, it did work. And I mean, I've said this before, that if that kind of level of belief and intention had been put towards like a Ouija board instead of going out and looking up at the sky, I'm pretty confident I would have got a response from the Ouija board, because it's not necessarily the phenomena at play more so than your actual intention of something and your belief that something's going to happen. So, because I kind of think it's all the same stuff. I think it's all the same stuff. It's just the universe talking to you in different modalities and mediums, whether it's Ouija or CE5 or, you know, whatever it might be. It's just a little wink and a nod that there's more, and you've tried to like step into it, and it goes, yeah, there is something here. And it's whether or not you just dive into it completely.
We were laughing a bit earlier on when we were talking about what did Hubbard and Parsons actually do out in the desert. Did they Nepal, blah, blah, blah. We were laughing. Now we're talking about our own experiences like that. So really, it's, you know, it's easy to have a chuckle in it, other people's woo-woo, but then you start talking about your own and go, fuck, it's pretty much what I'm saying. All mine was, at that period of my life, that was all internal, though. The stuff I was getting was, you know, in the mind. You saw something external, that's a whole different ballgame, man.
Yeah, man, but, like, that's the thing, is you do normalize it, so you're right, because we're too quick to, like, knee-jerk kind of laugh and maybe just dismiss people's stories and experiences, but, like, I get really annoyed when people think that I'm just lying or that I hallucinated it, and it annoys me. I know that I was awake and sober and fully looking up in the sky, and I saw these things with my own eyes, but I've normalized it. So if I explain it casually, it sounds completely crazy to most people, and it is crazy. It is crazy.
But you're not the first person to have had that specific kind of experience as well, ball of light with them, isn't it? Like,
there's so many, like, such a common phenomena, so common, like, real quick, that when I told my mom about that experience, she actually was curious enough to look up some, like, you know, research, and was actually looking into it, and she found a newspaper story from Nottingham, like, and not just from Nottingham, but from my road, like, reporting about orange balls of light flying through the sky, and it was, like, literally a story from someone who was on my very road. So it's like, come on, man. Like, you know, this is such a common experience that people all over the world have seen. Different colors as well. So that's what's interesting about orbs. Different colors, different kind of phenomena.
Well, you know, like in your region, like there's been quite a lot of studies done about these balls of light and stuff about being connected to seismic activity. And the idea that it can release certain types of energy into the atmosphere. But that energy could be living in a form of like living energy, like plasmic energy or whatever. And at certain times, these things appear and they can respond to humans, you know, like they did to you, you know. Well, I remember when you were talking about it a while back, I went and bought a load of books about it and tried to find out a bit more about it, man. I'm trying to find the name of the guy who wrote the book, but there's a bloke who specifically gets into all this. You should read it. I'll find it for you and send it over here.
Well, I mean, like what I did, I took like, what, 12 guys that were all Masons or, you know, Rosicrucians, and I made them. Anyway, we all did it. But everybody was really cool about it. You know, even the guys that were kind of skeptical, I mean, you know, a little bit skeptical, they were still, you know, trying it, right? And we did it two nights in a row. And there was a lot of us, and I think so that's like amplifies it, you know? But I mean, and I haven't done it either, but you know, I just might want to do it just to, but do something even more. Like, okay, I want to see something. But we kind of already seen something. So now it's like, we'll step it up. Come down here, or, you know, well, burn a hole in the ground. Or...
That's how it felt with me, was that it was a progression, because it didn't start with these orange orbs of light. You know, it started with like minor phenomena or like increases in what looked like satellites, but just more than you'd ever normally see in the sky. And then like flashes of light from nowhere, like just a completely static flash of light in the night sky, no discernible object. And then you'd send another, you know, even saying send another thought sounds crazy. So like I would kind of go, you know, project and send a thought, even though I truly believe that's what's happening. I still feel that, like, you know, juxtapose it with the doubtful Thomas, but like, you know, projecting a thought, having a flash, projecting a thought, having a flash. And that kind of stuff was happening over and over. I was going out every single day, every single night, you know, in the summer of 2019. And then I think maybe like 2 months down the line, that's when I had the experiences with the orange orbs of light. But before then, it was all of these other things. And I did take friends out. Like, I took friends out. Jean, you know, the ranges, like the area just near me where you can go up and, you know, it's like a kind of nice big hill and it's a cool place.
Yeah, yeah.
Stargates, right? And like, I took my friends up there. I took people up there and they all saw the flashes. They all saw bright white orbs coming over, glowing really brightly and flashing and then doing that repeatedly. And it's like, I've never seen anything like this in my life. And so it does happen. Like, it is an observable phenomenon. Like, it's not just like a psychic projection. It's something that a group can actually witness all together, you know?
I believe it, man, because, I mean, like, it. I really want to find this book. It's upstairs. I'll go grab it in a bit. But, like, it gets into the idea that, you know, like, because, you know, where you live, because you're in Nottingham City or just outside, just down the road from you, there's a hot spot. Of seismic activity. And obviously in this country, in the UK, we don't get massive earthquakes and stuff, but it's enough to be considerable. And it's around the Hockley region of Nottingham City. But apparently they reckon that that emanates these seismic activity, and that's where people are seeing these balls of light emanating from that. It's kind of weird, like, when you look into it. But again, like, that's not taken away from the fact that it's not saying that these things are a direct result of just earthquakes and it's something normal. And apparently they've got like a kind of sense to them, you know?
Because the first time I saw them, you remember the whole cloud? This is legitimately what happened. There was this dark, stormy, kind of staticky looking cloud. Like, it was like shimmering and it had like this weird static to it. And it was flowing across the sky. And then it literally did a right angle turn. Like, it literally just went like that. And started coming towards me on my garden path, like I'm looking up at the sky and this cloud is now coming in my direction. And it just dissipates above my head, like it just gets sucked into itself. And there's a triangle formation of these orbs, right? These orange orbs. And then they came down from the sky, three of them, like flew not on the same night, on a different night, flew across the sky, stopped on a dime, started coming down, like doing this weird maneuver, like moving around each other like this, like kind of rotating around each other, and then froze a few feet above the roof of the house. And one of the weird things with the whole light phenomena is that they weren't actually giving reflection onto the surfaces. There wasn't light spill off. It was like this weird self-contained light. So yeah, man, like exotic ball lightning piezoelectric phenomena that's maybe, I mean, it would have to be intelligent, like the way it was behaving, the way that they were acting, the fact that they could create some form of strange cloud effect that was obviously, I don't know, like masking, like a shield or a field or something.
I've told you about my friends when I was growing up. I grew up in a little town just outside of Nottingham. And two girls I know were sat on top of the local skate ramp. And we're talking, this is when we would have been 15. So I'm 47 now. So some time ago, yeah. I can't remember what year that'd
be. You look great for 47, by the way. Fantastic. Oh, keep it up. Keep it up.
Just chilling. but yeah, they were sat on top of the skate ramp and it was, dark evening. And they said they saw an orange ball of light, but quite far away. Like, there's like a kind of bridge, long bridge of lead up going up to it, like a ramp. And they saw it descend over that, come across the field towards them, hover really close by. They freaked, yeah? And both ran. And when they told us all, when they told us all, the next day, it was, we saw this fucking ball of light. It's orange ball of light that descended. We were just like, yeah, right, you did. Yeah, exactly, yeah. But then, do you know what happened to both of those girls? Both of them ended up going and joining the Sammy Ling Monastery up in Yorkshire, like the Buddhist monastery. Like, both of them, yeah? Mm. One of them's passed away now, which is pretty sad. The other one, she's a Buddhist nun. And I think that experience, for some reason, had a big effect on her. It's crazy. I see her every now and again, and I've asked her about it. She's a bit cagey. Like, I think it really did affect her heavily, yeah? Like, to the point where she changed her life and wanted to live in a monastery.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was the ball of light. But Retford, like where I'm from, it's a weird little town because, I mean, I saw a UFO, I've seen two over this town. And Retford is where the BBC, the Ministry of Defence, when they released the UFO files in this country a few years ago, that was where the big photo was, the one that got put out as and there's a fella, you'll see it, he was responsible for, the guy, Professor David Clark, up at Sheffield Uni, is in the UFO scene. He was the guy that did the photograph with, the photograph, the Nick Pope photograph.
With the craft thing. Yeah.
Looks like a rock.
Yeah.
The Calvine. Yeah. Calvin.
Calvin.
So David, the only reason I'm giving a reference to that is David Clark did a lot of work into this fella called Alex something or other. He's a guy who took a quite famous photograph of all these UFOs coming across the fields outside of his house. And it hit all the newspapers in like the 50s or the 60s or something. It was like, oh my God, this is a serious flying saucer moment. Yeah. And anyway, after a few years of him being like the poster child for taking all these amazing photos of UFOs, he came out and went, oh, I actually hoaxed it. And now though, right, now he's in his 70s, he lives in our town, yeah? Sheffield's very close to where we are as well. That's where he was born. And he came out and said, well, I didn't fake them, they were real, but I had so many people mocking me, so many people on my back at the time. It was like the source of crazy, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted them off my back, so I said it was a fake. Wow. And he's the guy, weirdly, decades later, who now lives in Retford, where I'm originally from, who took that photograph above the town hall, which then hit our mainstream papers in like 2011 or something like that. It's the same fella,
right?
Now it's here, yeah. So there's some action around these parts for sure, yeah. But it's interesting that this guy's like taken two seminal UFO pictures.
We should maybe even try and meet up with him. Like, this is the thing. Like, this is a weird area. Like, it's genuinely a bit of a weird area. And you had the Rolls-Royce Aerospace, like just down the road from me, not far away, is Rolls-Royce Aerospace Center, which is closed down now. But it's like one of the only aerospace places in the UK that's cleared for nuclear material. So it's a pretty weird, interesting place. And they create the first VTOL aircraft here, vertical takeoff and landing aircraft here, called the Flying Bedstead, which is like this weird, experimental VTOL aircraft. So there's a lot of strange stuff going on around this particular area, that's for sure. And also with that guy, like, it just kind of it kind of talks to the whole consciousness connection with the phenomena. Like, why is this guy able to keep
right.
getting photographs? Like, why do they keep turning up? And he's able to get all these photographs. So if he's not faking them, you know, it is that weird thing of it's like it doesn't want to be fully proven, but then it will show up for a specific person, and maybe it's belief and intention. And
well, weirdly, with this guy that Retford fell, the one who took these photos back in the late 50s and then took this one above the town hall, which, you know, the Ministry of Defence released,
yeah.
He's then gone on to say that a lot of this stuff was psychic, and that when he took that picture above the town hall, it was during quite heavy snow at night, and he was sat at home, and he just went, there was like something that basically compelled him to drive. I think he lives in one of the villages outside town, to drive into the town, to the square, and take a picture. And he said he didn't actually see anything in the sky until the photo was developed. But yeah, I'll send you the pictures so you can like put them up on this video over here.
Well, this is this is why it almost feels like it's either the universe itself, like the simulation itself, interacting with us in specific ways. But that's why, because like the thing with like that kind of psychic element, it feels like they have to have such a level of control and influence over your own life, and like can insert synchronicities into your life and like mold and actually manifest things in that way, that it just feels like it has to be something this like omnipotent, omnipresent. So I kind of revert back to the idea that it's actually reality itself responding to you. Otherwise, it's kind of worrying, because the idea that there's an intelligence out there that can just completely penetrate all elements of your understanding of reality, like, well, like, what do you do with that? What do you do with that information, huh?
I mean, always get this, and I've been going down this weird road. I actually went to a Catholic mass for the first time in years, not on purpose. I mean, it's because I had to for my kid. But, you know, I went and I sat through it. And in America, I mean, I was raised Catholic. My whole life I had to go to Catholics, you know, mass, Sunday, CCD, which is like catechism, right? When I was a kid, because I didn't go to Catholic school. But anyway, you know, it's beat into you. It's a ceremony. You just, you know, you hear, you stand up, you sit down, you do this, you kneel, you know, just Catholic mass. I don't know if everybody, you guys ever been to mass like that? Okay. So at the end of mass, they did this new prayer, and it was the prayer to St. Michael. Archangel St. Michael, and this is this whole prayer, and I'm like,
yeah,
what the fuck? Like, I know I haven't been to mass in a long time, right? But I'm like, why are we calling the Archangel St. Michael for fucking protection? And when did this happen, right? So one of my great friend's advisor, he was a Franciscan monk for years, right? And he left the monastery, right? And he's, you know, married kids, you know, this stuff. He's really, you know, he's out of it. But, you know, I asked him, I'm like, what the actual fuck is going on with this, right? And he's like, oh yeah, that happened, whatever. Because, you know, the Vatican will tell something and then just everybody has to do it, right? It's just, that's part of your mass now. You just do it. And I'm thinking, at one point, why did we have this mass that went on for years? I mean, for, I don't know, 30 years that I remember, 25 years, whatever that I remember. We didn't have this prayer to St. Michael the Archangel. And then he said, well, do you know about St. Michael? And I'm like, nah. He's like, well, he is as God or something. He cited whatever the Bible verse was. And he'd be like, St. Michael is as powerful as God.
Archangel, or yeah, like right hand man sort of stuff,
right? He could do whatever he wants, right, basically. But he sent me this other thing that he has to bow to you. He was created, humans were created through God internally through God, when the angels were created externally, or external to God. So these archangels, as powerful as they are, have to bow to you because you're a direct descendant from God, right? That they are, you know, as powerful as they are, they can't hurt you, but they're there for you. When you call them, they have to help you. They're there, right? And it's twisting me up, and I'm thinking, what's going on in the world that at some point the Vatican said, we got to start praying to this archangel to protect us after every mass all over the fucking planet, and we have to start doing it now?
Yeah.
Why? Maybe because it works, and maybe because it something is happening. And I'm using it as a loose, you know, analogy to whatever we want to call it, NIH, whatever you want to call them, angels, you want to call them demons. But what if there's some truth to this? What if there's something that's...
Michael's like one of the really popular angels in the New Age movement. Like, which is strange to see that crossover coming into mainstream Catholicism. But Yeah. I suppose not so strange, because we talked about it before, you know, like these movements that have been accepted by the Vatican over the last decade, who were very close to channeling
paganism, channeling, yeah, the channeling, yeah, the angel, Saint Forum, or what's it, Angelium?
Sanctorum, Angelorum.
Basically, they were channeling
Sanctorum, Angelorum.
Yeah. That's it, Ordo Sanctorum, right. Angelorum. So basically, they're channeling angels.
Who
and writing a shit down.
When you look at their techniques, they're like the same techniques that, again, people quote in Crowley, OTO stuff, and it's Enochian stuff. Yeah, it's really weird. Like, what's even weirder is the woman that founded that movement. It's quite, yeah, controversial, because lots of people
read back
gone missing or murdered off the back of this sect, apparently. But her descendant was Hieronymus Bosch.
He's the artist.
Yeah, the artist, right? Artist. Yeah, the crazy hell visions and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've got a book.
Yeah, so like, I mean, he obviously was painting a lot of this stuff, visions of hell, demons, angels. And it was his ancestor, this woman, Gabrielle Bitalik, who started to have visions of angels and demons and had prophecies as a kid, and went on to set up this religious order, which now has been ordained by the Pope and everything. And, but for a long time, the Vatican was saying it's like super dangerous, we cannot have anything to do with it. And now it's like a fully paid up member of the Vatican, yeah.
Well, it's interesting that kind of, I'll talk about it when John comes back as well, but it's kind of interesting that he was saying about like this change to the prayer, because do you know about, I think it was General Mike Flynn, like doing this weird theosophical prayer in a Catholic mass. He was like, was it like Elizabeth Clare? Elizabeth Clare?
Yeah. I don't know. I know what you're talking about though, because he started making reference to like, almost like the Luciferian stuff, isn't it?
He did like a full-blown, like, Elizabeth Clare verbatim kind of prayer that's like a theosophical prayer, and lots of people were pulling him up on it. I'm pretty sure it's Mike Flynn, because I was just looking it up, and there's a lot of...
It is Mike Flynn, yeah.
So, and that was at, like, a Catholic mass, and I think a lot of Catholics that, like, picked up on it got really offended by this, like, weird alteration to it. What do you think's going on with that? Because it kind of feels like it ties in maybe to what John's talking about.
It does. And it also ties into some of the stuff around, you know, what Danny Sheehan was saying, you know, in his weird website with the stuff that was sort of the hidden code in the background.
Yeah, what he was saying about like kind of having to succeed where Lucifer had failed, which is the whole idea of like the necessary darkness, light, theosophical duality, right?
Yeah, a more Gnostic viewpoint of it all. I suppose if you were worried about that stuff, you'd probably call it Luciferian. Well, it is. But like people
take offense at that, because people kind of go, well, it's not devil worship, which is true. It's not like devil worship. It's like a different perspective of looking at Lucifer as like the kind of necessary shadow light dynamic in reality, right?
Yeah, well, Lucifer is kind of like, from what I can make out with that movement, that sort of belief system, it's like loves humanity, loves the planet Earth, loves matter, loves things that we can create as humans, as opposed to, and it's taking everything into the love of matter and self-creation, not spirit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't take it.
Yeah.
Sort of like, and the idea is we become the gods, you know, like, we are the ones moving towards that point. And that philosophy comes from, this is where I'm feeding back to the Catholics, goes back to Danny Sheehan, directly influenced by a Jesuit priest philosopher called Pierre Chardin de Teilhard de Chardin. And he was the guy who came with the idea of the Omega point, which was the idea that we're all ascending to become Christ-like, the Christ consciousness.
Christos, right? The Christos.
Yeah. So that's Danny Sheehan's little society that he has. It's called the Christic Society. the Christic Society. And that whole thing, when you look into it, the impetus behind setting it up was based off the philosophies of this Jesuit priest, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who was this guy who was incredibly controversial because he was trying to bring scientism, humanism into Catholicism, which is the idea of bringing it back to earthly matters and physical and us reaching a higher evolutionary point as opposed to wanting God to take us to one. Yeah, we reach it as opposed to being met by it.
Right.
But what's interesting about all that as well, though, is so you've got like Danny Sheehan, who's been in this world for a long time, surrounded by these mysteries and pushing a lot of this stuff. And when you sort of see what he was involved with back in the day, like it gets back into stuff that's been online on Netflix recently. You know, we've talked about it before, Danny Casolaro, The Octopus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Sheehan was doing a lot of work around that, you know, positive stuff, you know, like trying to expose it all. And part of what all that Christic Society stuff was it was trying to expose basically the deep state, yeah, weirdly, even though the philosophy came from this Jesuit way of thinking. But strangely, Danny Sheehan, if you're a skeptic, you could probably go, well, this guy's a hoaxer, yeah, because he tells a lot of tall tales. I have actually touched a UFO. I don't know if you said that, but I know somebody who has it. I've seen the photos, I've been in the briefings, I know this for sure. He's really, like, you know, if you want to put him down as being a high level, well, high level hoaxer, but a bit of a hoaxer, a bit of a chance, you could easily do that. Weirdly, his, you know, Christic Society comes off the back of the philosophies of Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. When you research him, he potentially was a hoaxer of major proportions, yeah? You heard of the Piltdown Man?
The Piltdown Man?
Piltdown. It's a place in the UK. Yeah, like basically, like, they did an archaeological dig there, like back in the 50s or something like that, maybe slightly before, and they thought they'd found a skull, which was like the missing link, yeah?
That's right.
This is the missing link, and it played into Darwin's theory of evolution perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time, it was like, well, we found it. This proves Darwin, you know? Humanism, you know, bringing it back to evolution, away from creationism, which is what Teilhard de Chardin went on to basically promote, and this idea of bringing it back to the humanist element. But it turns out that it was all faked, and what the skull was, it had been placed there because the archaeological dig, they knew it was ongoing. Someone placed it there in a place they knew they'd find it, and it was the skull of some ape linked to the jawbone of another type of ape. But it was a hoax, and it took years for him to figure that out, right? And then when you dig into it, who was there on this dig? Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. And you start going, like, hang on a sec. And what that was doing was literally, do you know, if they'd never uncovered that as a hoax, that would have set world education history books to say, this is our history. This was the missing link. There was a type of, you know, ancient man that was this type. It recreates our entire history. So if you've got somebody who's capable of doing that, hoaxing to that level, who then goes on to become, do you know what I'm saying? You see how easily influenced an entire world and every history book from that point onwards can be if it's done in the right way. Yeah? And that guy, when he did that, was only in his 20s or something. He just was like, he had his motivation, I guess. And he tried his best to do it. And for a long time, it went through. You know, people believed it.
Just like UFOs.
That's the thing, right? Like, you gotta, if you have a strong enough belief in something and like the way something is supposed to be, then you might be capable of hoaxing and faking to try and convince other people that, you know, this needs to be taken seriously. And I think we're always at risk of that type of behavior being passed off as a genuine, you know, event or a story or a claim, because someone actually believe so hard in something that they're willing to fake something because they feel that they're justified. They know it's real, so they can fake it to convince other people.
And
they,
exactly,
you know,
if what you're trying to do is you're trying to hijack a religion, because it went on to be that his motivations were the reformation of the Catholic Church to some degree. I mean, obviously the guy didn't manage that, or maybe he did from what John's saying, but like, you know, he was trying to make an impact on it. And Danny Ciel, from what I can make out, has got his own version of that going. He wants to make an impact on the world. He wants people to believe that we've got alien visitation. He's seen evidence of it. We know that from his website, from some of his other influences, that he's got this theosophical background, the idea of the Luciferian rise to humanity reaching a new eon, becoming something different, evolving. You know, like, so if someone's got skin in the game and they believe that shit and they want to push that through, and belief, mass belief, can only be done probably by telling a few fibs.
Thing is, you know, what the funny thing about it is, I actually do agree that there is probably some like massive transitionary phase coming up along the line pretty soon. Like, I just get an intuition that we can't actually keep on this same trajectory for very long, and things are...
You know why I believe it? Because 10 years ago, and less than 10 years, 8 years ago, I was a completely different person. Like completely. Well, still pretty much the same, but none of this would have been in my head, and now it's everything in my head, yeah? Like, the idea of becoming a better version of myself, a smarter version, kind of why, you know, try it every day anyway. Like, something has put that into me, and I know other people who are the same, yeah? And people wake up and have woken up throughout time, yeah? It happens, but you get into this concept that you get a shift in consciousness globally or geographically, and that's when you get into the, you know, the stuff that's going on in Russia, some of their philosophers talking about the newer sphere, and how, you know, societies and areas of the world evolve in consciousness, or they evolve in spirit, and it pushes things forward at a faster rate. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So you got that coming out of like the Russian sort of side of it, which, you know, a lot of people in the West are talking about it now. And then we've had like the idea of the accelerationists, you know, and the hyperstition coming from like some of the Western philosophies and stuff like that. People are, they're seeing it as a mass movement. And I don't know if it's real or not, but like I said, I mean, I can speak from personal example, how easy it is to change and to become something different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's interesting. So on mass, yeah, I can believe it. Although I do have to give myself pride every now and again and just be like, you know, we are in an echo chamber. We're all very similar.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people we talk to were very similar too. And when we go online, all of the algorithms that our social media is feeding us are other people talking about the same stuff. So it's quite easy to fall yourself into thinking it's a great awakening. If I went down the pub and started talking about this great awakening, they'd be like, what the fuck are you on about, man?
No, you're right. But like, there is like a, you know, I guess like a sense of a built-in acceleration. If you just look at the way humanity's going evolutionarily, like we are speeding up down particular avenues of innovation and developments, and the way it is right now with different things happening in like artificial intelligence and quantum computation and superconductors and all of this. Yeah, you're right. Like the layman and the majority of people are just living their lives, but the world is speeding up. Like things are happening in sectors that are just increasing the pace of development, and people will just go with the flow of that. Like a lot of people just move with the slipstream of development, of the way society changes and moves. But people like us are looking at it and going, well, actually, you know, this is happening so fast. There has to be a terminal point, or at least like a point of transition to something that's entirely new, because this is starting to feel like the old world, and a new world is building up and building up, and it's like all of these little signs of it popping up through different inventions and innovations. So like, I agree with you, but it's kind of like evolution doesn't really give a shit if you think that there's an awakening. Like it's kind of like,
yeah,
going to be something, and whether you're ready for it when it arrives or whether you're not ready for it when it arrives, it's still going to happen. I don't think that we're like in the definitive moment of the end of all moments in history, but it feels like we're at a really significant turning of the story in the human epoch. And the way that I look at it is just, I think to myself, like, well, you know, we have to try and, like you said, just improve as much as possible in whatever way we're feeling beckoned to improve in, you know?
I suppose, like the Prometheus myth, you know, like kind of becoming gods and you get burnt, you know, you create fire, you give that secret to other people, you get burnt by the fire. But like AI, for example, if we're in a period of time now where it's moving, that kind of tech's moving exponentially and it does become a sentient form of life almost, yeah. What does that make the people who have created it? Gods. They're creators. So you get to that point where you go, well, we've just become something else. This species, what we are, has reached a level where we can create life, whether that life is organic or not, if it believes itself to be sentient. That's what we've done, yeah. So once you get to that point, then we have actually reached a new level of humanity. But where does it go from there? I mean, I know that most myths usually end with being punished for that. And usually it's almighty punishment.
This is what we might find out in our lifetimes. You know, where do we go? Yeah. What is the next thing that happens? You know, do we get punished or do we become enlightened? We might be in the actual historical timeline of finding some level of an answer to that question.
I think that it's very important that we're all looking, at least that we're entertaining it and like questioning things outside of, you know, who won the football game or, you know, all this other bullshit, right? I mean, I think that's part of the reality that most of us are in. I mean, there's still, you know, a lot of people that aren't, but I think it's interesting that I think just the quest or just the knowing, I think, John Luke, you've told me a long time ago, just knowing that these things are happening is powerful, right? To just the awareness of things that are occurring is more powerful than you understand.
They can control, even the knowledge of these things happen can actually control you in a way. I mean, we've talked about this before, but I love this theory. You know, the Rocco's basilisk stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like the idea that if someone tells you about AI, you know, 10 years ago, if someone talks about AI to you, have you ever heard of AI? No, what's AI? Tell me about AI. Well, AI is artificial intelligence. It will do this, it will do that. That's what we hope to create. So once you've been told about AI and what's possible, you should then probably want to do everything you can to support AI's existence. Because at some point, AI is going to become more powerful than you. And no doubt, through using its crazy ways, we'll be able to find out your intentions and whether you were with it or against it. And if you were against it, it'll punish you. Yeah? And the punishment in Rocco's basilisk, because there was all these philosophers talking about it on a forum, or, yeah, you know, wannabe philosophers, and philosophers, whatever, philosophers, thinkers. And a lot of them got really frightened by it.
Didn't a couple of people actually take their own lives because of this?
Yeah, I'm not too sure about the ramifications, but I know that it fucked people's heads up. People were struggling with it, and there's people on there asking for help, sort of saying, like, you know, it's just messing me up. And what they started doing was dedicating a lot of their own time to AI, or dedicating money or donating money to organizations working on the cusp of AI. Because they were like, well, if I'm not seen by the AI in the future to have supported it, it'll punish me. And even to the point where they were thinking, they were going, well, this AI, what if it gets so smart that even after I've passed away, it knows how to re-simulate me? So I feel like I'm alive again in every single way, and then it just puts me into a hellscape for eternity.
I just don't see why it would need to. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see the impetus for it.
Because if you look at our biblical God, it's a mean, awful, punishing, the Old Testament one. Like, you know, why wouldn't AI want to do that? Like, just because intelligence.
That was
cruelty.
A way to...
Cruelty could be easily part of its default movement, you know, when he reaches God level. Could you be a mean bastard? Right?
I don't know about that, man. Like, I think that the interpretation that we've given of like the judgmental, vengeful, angry God is more of a humanistic interpretation, and I think you'd probably agree, as a way of actually getting people to be compliant and adhering, is to, you know, create the fear that if you're out of line, if you don't act in terms of societal norms, then this vengeful God will punish you. So, like, you know,
what my eye says, that I'll do the same thing. I want to control you, yeah? Like, Like an AI
that's like saturated all knowledge that we could possibly give it. I don't know if we actually like could predict where it would go with that. Like maybe it would become enlightened in some form of a sense.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah, hopefully, man. But yeah.
Either way, like to be honest, if Rocco's Basilisk turns out to be true, I'd be really pissed off if it tried to punish me. I've been building documents like is that not good enough for you? Seriously? Yeah. Like I've been a pretty good advocate. No, I mean, because I've a little bit.
Well, it's the same thing. Just replace AI with religion, any religion, right?
Yeah.
You could come into the kingdom of heaven now because you've done all the
look at the church of the tech, bro. I mean, we know some of ourselves.
Exactly.
Like, people are religious. Yeah. It's like, absolutely. They look at it. It's everything that they do. They wake up. It's like, time to do AI stuff. They go to sleep, think about AI, wake up and program AI. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's if we're going to maintain spirituality whilst like flying into hyperspace, it's going to have to be a scientific religion, right? So you've got ufology and Scientology and the tech bro world and like the psychedelics kind of melding it all together. And yeah, you know, it's kind of the amalgamation of a sci-fi religion. I mean, that's what Diana Pasolka would call it, I think, is like a sci-fi religion, right? Ufology.
Absolutely. Yeah. But it's, I mean, that's how it's all coming together, and this idea again of playing into like this Jesuit stuff I was talking about, the idea of like becoming gods, reaching God at his level, becoming this Christ consciousness, that is kind of playing into that idea. It's like, well, we can harness the power of the universe through our own creation, and it's whether that then wants to harness us.
So when Danny was saying in like on the website about succeeding where Lucifer failed, is that the idea then of like we have to pull ourselves out of matter? We have to like, you know, break out of this well of materialism and ascend ourselves. Like we can't wait for something to do it. We're gonna have to.
I think Lucifer wants to keep you in matter.
Yeah, exactly.
But it wants to make it a spiritualized version of the existence of matter. So it's like it's the worship of matter, the worship of stuff, the worship of ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Like superficial and gluttonous and like, you know, just
our own intelligence. Like, I mean, even if we become, you know, we all plant-based diet and we all work out every day and we meditate and we do all this stuff, yeah, but it's more about the love of ourselves, about what we're gonna come from that, as opposed to being like, you know, when you get into the basics of like Christianity, for example, like come around scroll stuff. It was about the spirit. It was about the breaking down of the material. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. Yeah. I think this is like, this is the thing, is like, I'm not against these ideas. It's just like, I think for me, it's the fact that there's a very dry bureaucratic template being presented by these same people. But when you look at their websites or you dig underneath, it's actually very spiritually and like kind of mystically enhanced. And like I said, I don't have an issue with the actual belief systems, because I think we do need to try and pull ourselves out of the material world more so than we are right now. And like, these are great things to try and endeavor for. So it's not, I don't really like have that much of an issue with that particularly, but it feels more like, it's like, it feels like it's the dirty secret that they don't want you to actually know about.
And I think so too. I think ufology is a cover for that.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah,
modern ufology is a cover for that. It's a cult. I mean, I don't mean in a bad way, but they're trying to change people's minds. They're trying to change how we think. They're trying to create their own piltdown man. They're trying to solve a mystery for us. Well, will help make us think we're helping them solve a mystery that doesn't actually exist. All it's doing is changing the way we think. And to change the way we think will maybe bring us closer to this concept of this Christ consciousness or the next period of evolution.
It is an interesting idea that the ufology template is a template for a spiritual movement that's like more appetizing for a modern like audience. So it's like, here's like, you know, flying saucers and alien technology, but underneath that we've got channeling and summoning and, you know, all of these different elements of much deeper and esoteric things. So like, the thing is, like, I can believe that because of the fact that when you dig underneath that template of vehicles and materials and acquisition and agencies. And once you kind of get underneath that, it always links back to esoteric schools, churches, and you know,
they don't hide it that much, do they? Like,
exactly, it's not stupid.
It's not. It's just always there. It's always like, you know.
Well, then you have people like Tim Burchett and everybody else come out. Like, I think it's angels. I think it's demons.
That's like Bible Belt growing up in the South. Like, he's got a religious background. Like, he interprets it the way he interprets it, you know?
No, but I mean, just like little, you know, even, I agree, it's his own interpretation, but I mean, even just that little flick of that information just echoes through people that may be thinking the same thing. It just reinforces their idea that
that's what it is. Now you've got a guy in government. Because a lot of people don't go, he's just a guy like everybody else with his own beliefs. They go, he's got the little America.
Yeah, he's got a special
lapel pin, and he's got the tie, and he's in Congress. And that's a lot of people, that's all they need. He's just another guy like us who just happens to be in politics. Like, he doesn't know anything more than we do. Like, he's just got his own belief systems, and he pushes them out of it.
It's true. I mean, like, so many of the people I've interviewed, as much as they've been great guests and interesting guests, in terms of, like, you know, hidden information or hidden knowledge, like, they don't have it, but you're always going to put the fact that they've got a PhD in the title because it sounds good. Like, people want to know that. People want to feel like they've got, it gives a level of gravitas. And I think it does to an extent, but then you have to, like, not treat that as some form of a I know everything title. Like, oh, well, you should treat everything. Say it's like,
well, we do as humans, we surround ourselves anybody of authority, right? Like a priestly class, anybody with authority, we tend to look to them for the answers for everything. As the you know, it started with the major religions, right, of the world, where, or the oracles, even the oracles know what's going on, right? So then that gets distilled down to the head priest or whoever, who is the only person that can speak to the oracles, and then we look to those people for the answers, and humans just do that shit.
Plus, like, ufology is primed for that anyway, because you're already looking for something to believe in, so that there's, you know, if you create conduits that present themselves as knowledgeable channels, a lot of people just cling on to that and go, well, they know. They clearly know. You know?
For every 100 humans that are asking questions and want to know and they want someone to tell them, you get that one person who's sociopathic enough to pretend they know the answers.
Of course.
Enter the sacerdotal priest. The sacerdotal priest. It's like, you know, because most people don't want to control other people. Yeah, they just want answers. Especially if you get to the period in your life where you're asking the big questions. There's some people out there. The L. Ron Hubbards. The, you know, the cult leaders. The many of them. Like, but yeah, you know, you only need one for every 100 to step forward and go, I know that. So, and I've done a little bit of esoteric reading so they can spin some bullshit that other people go, oh, really? Wow, yeah? It sounds like secret knowledge, but it's not. It's just knowledge. And then they give it to other people, but then they control them and they control that information and the flow of it, yeah? And it's becoming harder to do that because people have got their own resources nowadays. But, like, that's how it all works. Every single one of these people asks you questions, me included, most of the time I'm going to look to other people. And you're right, if you've got a PhD there and I write these books, but then I meet some of these people who've got PhDs. I've got two uncles who've got PhDs. They don't know everything. They're clowns about some stuff. Like, about their very narrow area of study, they know everything. Yeah? Like, what other stuff? Nothing at all. They're just like everybody else, yeah?
But the people still look for, people look for that, man. They look to somebody who is an heir of importance, and
just never look to anybody else for those. I mean, obviously you've got to respect people and their studies and their qualifications.
Right.
But maybe not so much when it's in things that aren't tangible. Because I mean, thinking, we're all capable of doing it, yeah. Like, so when somebody comes out with, and their PhD is related to metaphysics and that sort of thing, we're all capable of that type of thinking. It's whether you can say it with authority.
Well, yeah, but that's it. Like, that's why you shouldn't have titles like alien expert or anything like this. It's like,
you want that title? You feel like a dick. Someone called them after my name, alien expert.
I'd be like, change that shit immediately. I do not want to be anything that's like an alien expert.
No,
you know, like, this subject's full of people that claim definitives like that. You know, I like to ask, the whole thing is ideas, in my opinion. Like, it's exploring ideas and possibilities, Like my only root truth is that there is some form of a phenomenon, and it seems to also respond to consciousness. That's as far as I can go experientially, what I've witnessed. But like in terms of the subject, I just like to explore ideas, and like to be overly definitive of any of it is a little dangerous. I mean, I fell into it at one point with certain stuff, and I've fallen out of it again, and I question a lot. I try and not get sucked into it, you know.
Well, I mean, for example, right, like you said, that it's really easy to fall into it because, yeah, you know, look at David Grudge. I've got no opinion on him. He seems like a really nice fella, to be honest. But I think that he's been around people that give him stories, and they're the ones that got PhD after their name, or Colonel before their name, or whatever it may be. So when those stories come from them, they go, these have got to be real.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're still in that awe of the Colonel and of the PhD and all that. So everything that's coming to them from those names and those titles, they believe it. And they go, especially if you're part of a command structure, if you're a military-minded type, and that's how you've gone through a big chunk of your life, that affects how you think. I mean, there's been studies into that. I mean, people are way more inclined to follow what they're told by their superiors, yeah?
Yeah.
Like, part of the training, part of the breaking down of you as an individual is to become part of a team. And to be part of a team, you listen to one person a lot of the time, you know, or a hierarchy of command.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is...
Never been a fan of it. I'd never want to be a part of that shit. I like thinking myself.
The thing is, like, you know, so I got a fly flying around. I was trying to slap it around. yeah. The thing is...
How dare you? Those colonels are right about everything.
if you were here, I'd slap you senseless, boy. Like, you know, but it's you know, with someone like Grush, like UK, so he comes out and it's exciting because you've got this whistleblower and it's all new and it's someone new and you've never heard of them, and you know, it's all looking really exciting. But then you do find out that he's known, you know, Lou and these guys for a number of years. So it's kind of going back to the NIDS, to the ATIP, to the TTSA, to this group. So my question is, all right, so if it's this group that is echoing stories and giving people these different stories and convincing people like Grush that there is something to be taken seriously, where are they getting the story from? So, like, you know, I'm not completely against the idea that they actually do have some tangible, actionable intelligence that maybe is so sensitive that they can't directly leak it, but where are these stories coming from? Like, someone's giving the original story to someone who then gives it to, I don't know, Lou or Chris or Hal, who then gives it to Grush. And that's what I'm wondering. Like, who's the original?
Well, you need to, I reckon that a good study for that is something that you're involved in, like the Wilson documents, yeah?
Yeah.
It's a modern chapter in this story, in this narrative, where a whole element of it with new players gets brought into play and gets pushed out there as canon, yeah? I'm not saying it's not, but but when you follow it all the way back to the, and you know a lot more than I do about this, yeah. I don't know, this topic upsets quite a few people too, but when you follow it back, it comes back just to one person who says this stuff about where the information came from, and that then channels down across and then cascades out, yeah. And because it comes from the legacy of Edgar Mitchell. Edgar Mitchell, you know, he was part of the PSYOP crew.
Hey, well, he was part of NIDS, he was AVRE, he was all part of, you know, that thing. And this goes back again to titles, Apollo Astronaut, you know, it's like, well, we got to listen to everything he has to say. But again,
a cultist, Freemason, noetic site, you know, all that stuff, you know, like, it's...
You know, he did this like an experiment on the moon, you know, and this everybody kind of glosses over. He had a legitimate psychic experiment on himself.
He had people on Earth that would like doing like shape remote viewing. Like he was
doing their cards, wasn't he? Like the what they called the Zeneca. What they called those cards?
The psychological. You know, it's like the triangle, the waves.
Ghostbusters cards.
Yeah, the Ghostbusters cards. We get shocked if you don't get the right one.
With the Wilson documents, like it's not just. This is the thing for me. Like this is what kind of keeps me like erring on maybe they are legit, or at least that it's not a complete fabrication is that Og Shannon acknowledged some pretty important elements of it, you know. When we met up with him.
Tell me about that. Like,
well, that's the thing, man. Like, you know, because he's mentioned in the docs. So he's mentioned in the script where, like, Eric Davis is talking to Admiral Wilson, and Admiral Wilson says that he wishes Oak could have been here, but that, you know, health conditions at the time, Oak wasn't in a condition to meet up with them, and they had been speaking to Linda, his wife, and, you know, that he wasn't well. And it goes on to say, I'm a big Og Shannon fan, because apparently he had had a phone call, like Admiral Wilson had called up Og Shannon to ask him about Eric Davis prior to this meeting, to vet him, to kind of get Og Shannon's opinion on Eric Davis, because they'd done joint work. For those that don't know, Og Shannon was the former special projects manager at Los Alamos. So he was, you know, he had a portfolio in, like, you know, DOD and all these other things, and him and Eric had crossed paths in a professional capacity. And so, like, he's in the documents, he's mentioned as having, like, a long phone call with Admiral Wilson, vouching for Eric Davis, vouching for him and saying that he was legit, that, you know, the Admiral could trust him and talk to him, that he had the right tickets and, you know, was a trustworthy guy. Then you know, we reach out to Og Shannon, we manage to get in contact with him. We fly out to Florida, we have a lunch with him. And it was over the course of that lunch that he acknowledges that the Admiral did phone him, that the Admiral phoned him up and asked about Eric Davis, and it was a pretty long phone call, and that he had basically vouched for his authenticity and, you know, gave him the nod of authentication. So, like, and he also mentioned that at the time he had had a major heart attack, was on the operating table and was in a really poor condition. So Linda was taking calls. So
Oak had a heart attack, yeah?
Yeah, Oak had a heart attack. So, like, the fact that in the documents it mentions the fact that Og Shannon's difficult to get in touch with because of health conditions, and they spoke to Linda and, you know, all of that, and the fact that he had this phone call with the Admiral, and then Og Shannon...
What was he vouching for, though? He was vouching for Eric Davis's credibility.
Yeah, like, you know, can I... I'm going to meet up with this guy, and, you know, can he be trusted? Can I talk to him? Is he someone that is considered to be, you know... Will he run his mouth? Will he not run his mouth? That kind of stuff, by the sounds of it. He didn't really give me too many specifics about the nature of, like, the entire phone call, but he did say that he'd vouched for Eric on the phone call to the Admiral. And this was prior to the apparent meeting. So it's, well, just...
I'd vouch for you to an Admiral too. Go, yeah, he's a sound dude. But then you could turn up and be like, yes, yes, I've seen a grey alien flew through my window last night.
But this is the thing, isn't it? Like, it's not Eric who has the story. It's the Admiral that apparently has the story, and he's giving it to Eric. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
Now, the issue is that obviously Admiral Wilson has denied this. Like, he has fully denied that this ever happened, and he's said this multiple times now when journalists have gone to him and asked him about it, which, you know, it's difficult because in the documents it's apparently, you know, transcripted that he says, if any of this gets out, I'll deny ever knowing you, that this conversation ever happened. So if that was true, then he's just following the script of what he said he'd do. But it's convenient as a cover as well. So I can understand why people would think it might be faked. And, you know, using it as a driver to get this conversation going, which has been done because it's now put into the congressional record. It was put into the congressional record by Gary Nolan's advice to Gallagher. Gallagher was the one that actually placed it in the congressional record. So, like, you know, it's been used as a tool. But for me, I do think it's interesting that Og confirmed it, bro. Like, that to me was like another point of, like, validation. Is like, well, here's another guy outside of the full mix who's not actually involved, like, retired by the seaside in Florida, living a quiet life, and isn't involved in the UFO discussion openly. And he was like, yeah, man, like, the guy phoned me and we called, and, you know, so I don't know.
Maybe, but maybe the thing is, though, like, I don't know. I mean, I want to be down with it, but I just struggle because of
maybe the Admiral met him and Eric Davis has been a bit fruity with the actual conversation. And,
you know, yeah, well, that's it. But it could have been about all manner of other things. But then this whole thing starts and the wheels spin, and we get back to the whole Sacerdotal Knights, you know, like, even if they aren't the Sacerdotal Knights, they've got knowledge of it. They know all about the hoaxing of this stuff. They know all about the long-term strategy of this stuff.
mate, I revert back to the fact that this subject has a lot of psychological leverageability, right? So, like, it's not sensible to blindly trust anything that's just relying on some claims and some words.
Reject it.
Sit in the middle. And actually, like, something that, you know, John Romero said, which is embrace widely but hold lightly. And I actually really like that. John just said he's chatting with Warner. Be right back.
What?
Gone off to chat to Warner.
Tell him to come on here.
Yeah, bring hang on a second. Bring him in.